session number 24830, Reel 3. Mr. Hipperson, Reel 3. We're talking about your time between around about April 51 to June 51 at Roman Way Camp doing your continuation training.
That's right.
What happened at the end of that?
What happened was, before we finished our continuation training, we had about another week to go. They changed the system. And they changed it. So I went back to where I did the basic training at their own regimental depots, where when I went in, we were all together in the East Anglian Brigade at Bury St Edmunds, all regiments mixed, Norfolk, Suffolk, Essex, etc. They changed the system back, so they did the 6 week basic training and the 10 weeks continuation training at Bury St Edmunds. So we had about another week of our continuation training to do, which we finished at Bury St Edmunds. So I actually finished back at Bury St Edmunds the last week, where we had a passing out parade. And they were then given 2 weeks embarkation leave.
Anything about the passing out parade, or was it just...
No, it was just a normal sort of thing. Nothing very special at all. Nothing to stick out in my mind. So.
What happened next then, when you got back from leave?
When we got back from embarkation leave, we hung about at Bury for a couple of weeks, at Bury St Edmunds, just waiting to go abroad. Not doing very much. They issued us with the jungle green kit and all the rest of it. And
no, what did you remember about the kit they issued you with?
Well, that was all sort of floppy stuff, you know, trousers and shirts and floppy brimmed hats and jungle green webbing, which is great. No braces, no blanco, gaiters and belt. And shorts, obviously shorts, trousers, shorts, shirts, jackets, three-quarter jackets. We were issued with all this kit, and we were going to Hong Kong for further training.
Now, who are you going to join in Hong Kong?
The Middlesex Regiment, who were then back, who then returned back from Korea. They'd done their stint in Korea and they were back in Hong Kong.
What do you remember of the voyage out?
Oh, it's horrendous, wasn't it? I mean, that opened your eyes. I mean, you heard it, aren't you? I remember leaving Bury on the train and we spent the night in some underground plumbing place in London, like a tube station what was never finished. And they shipped, and then the next morning we went up to Liverpool. Got on this troop ship, the MV Devonshire. I'll never forget it as long as I live. As you walked up the gangplank, as you walked on, there's a bloke stood there, and the discipline on the ship was run by the RAF, strangely enough. And there was a flight, somebody stood at the top of his gangplank, and he gave you a card, and that was where you were. And I was on mess deck 4 lower.
Then what was the mess deck like?
There was 376, or was it 276 hammocks. No bed, no, there were no bunks. You all had a hammock, which you threw on the mess deck above your mess table. And you were actually given a mess table number. Our mess table number was 18. I was remembering, there's a reason for this, aren't you? 18. Mess table 18, deck 4 lower. Messing for, and that was a big notice out there. Net, and as you went down there, messing, I can't remember, it's 200 or 300. Messing for 376. Hammocks for 266. I thought, well, that's funny. But anyway, you had this table and you could throw your hammock above this table. And you had to put your kit in a rack. Wow, that's horrendous. Well, I mean, if people put cattle in something like that today, they'd be a riot. And we got on this bloody thing, this whole ship, and off we went. Tarp speed 12 knots. And we set off for Hong Kong. And, dear old God. Yeah, I remember a couple of days out, we ended up.
What about the hammock? How did you get over the hammock? Because you must have.
Oh, we scuttled these hammocks at night. Because everybody was struggling to get in them the first time till you get the knack of how to get in the blooming thing. And you had somebody's feet in each ear, all the hammocks crisscrossed. And you had your feet was in somebody's ear, and somebody had their feet in your ear, you know. That was very, very crowded indeed. And as far as the mess decks were concerned, there was, I don't know, about maybe 18 volts on each mess deck. And you took it in turns of being orderly. And you had to go to the galley and bring the trays of food from the galley for these people on this mess deck. And you took it in turns of being orderly on them. We sailed through down the coast of Portugal and that, and then we got in the Bay of Biscay. Ah, dear. Came round and into the Bay of Biscay. I woke up the next morning because all these hammocks were all gone, boom, boom, swaying about. And I thought, oh, heavens, that smell. Apart from everything else, you can imagine all these blokes all taking their boots off and everything at the same time at night. And God, whatever is it good? It weren't, the air thing weren't that good. And we got down there and I woke up in the morning. Oh, God, I go up on the deck and I see this blooming great ship, which I never thought would be I thought ain't no waves big enough to move us. That was being tossed about all over the place. And everywhere you went, they were sick. Everywhere. I went in the toilets, or the toilets were full of sick, the wash basins. Went up on the deck, the gullies on the deck were all full of sick. That was absolutely horrendous. And of course with that, you ain't long before you join them, is it? Well, I mean, apart from the fact your stomach is a bit wheezy, and then you're getting everybody is being seasick. How many folks was on that boat? Probably 2,000 or 3,000, and a couple of thousand anyway, and they were all being seasick. And that was...
How bad were you?
I wasn't too bad. I weren't bad. To be honest with you, I had about 5 or 6 hours out, and then I was okay. I was never seasick again on board. And in fact, when we went round Bajib and went into the Med, because it was then August, we set sail on the 1st of August. We left England the 1st of August. And as we sailed into the Med, the sea was calm. And of course, the weather was warm. And for most of the way then, I slept on deck. I used to take my hammock and my blanket up. Several of us did it. We used to roll a hammock out on the deck and then make a bed up on top of it. And we used to sleep up on deck, rather than go to sleep down below.
That was better.
A lot better. And the only time we slept down below next time was when we were somewhere in the Indian Ocean when the sea came rough, you know, and you couldn't sleep. The only thing was you used to have to get up early. You used to get up at 6 because the crew of the boat used to wash the decks down at 6, hose them down with the fire hoses, you know, salt water fire hoses, and they didn't tell you when they were going to start. That was up to you. If you were down there, you got wet, you know, so somebody would scream out over there, and then, of course, you'd grab your bedding and run down below. But
what about the food? You mentioned about this number 18.
This mess table, yeah, the food. Well, that wasn't too bad. That was sort of shitful. We were a little better off. We'd bought cigarettes for next to nothing and things like that. But the overcrowding was horrendous. Really, when you think about it, God, dear, oh dear, oh dear. I have so many people on there, and that was unbelievable. And the distinction then between the other ranks and the officers was tremendous. You know, the class distinction. Every morning we used to have captain's inspection of the ship. And you had to go to your emergency boat stations and stand there in three ranks in that easy position. And we'd be standing there, say, somewhere in the Red Sea, and the temperature would be up in the hundreds, and we'd be standing there in the sun for about 2 hours while the captain inspected the ship. In the saloon, through the window just behind me, were the officers of the saloon. And they'd be sitting there with a big drink with all the ice bobbing up and down. And and you'd sort of look round and they'd be sitting there with the old gin and tonic and the officers wouldn't. And there we'd be standing, the other ranks, we'd be standing out there and the sun beating down. Temperature's up to about 100 and plus 100. And you stand there in the sun for about 2 hours while the captain inspected the ship. But, and the way they ate and the way we ate. But I think that was probably the worst troopship on the run they had at the time, the Devonshire, because I was speaking to other blokes later on who came out, and they had cabins with about four blokes in bunks, or six blokes in bunks in them. But, oh dear, this thing there with a hammock flying on. Oh dear. We'd have a canteen on there or anything like that. There used to be a little bloke who used to open a hall, a little window, and sold mugs of tea out of it in the evening, and that was about it. Yeah.
Were there any duties or anything to do?
No, not really, apart from when you was your duty as orderly at mess table orderly, you know, getting the food and keeping the mess table reasonable. But, I mean, apart from that, we used to, it was hours and hours and hours. I used to walk round the ship. And me and my old mate, Pat, who I met, as I said earlier, at Thorpe Station.
Pat Harrison, yeah.
Yeah. We used to sit up the front and sort of watch the porpoises jumping in and out of the bowway for hours and hours on end. So we used to just sit there and watch the sea, really. But things used to happen, little bits. They'd organise tug of war and things like that. But, nothing very much. We used to just keep walking round the ship quite a lot of the time, you know, get a bit of exercise, really. And we were only in a small unit, you see. There was a battalion, I can't remember which battalion it was out there. And I mean, when we docked at one place, they went on a march, you know, for exercise. But there was about 30 of us, and we were all Norfolks then. And the ones who weren't Norfolks previously, they'd put them into the Norfolk Regiment. And it took us 5 weeks to get to Hong Kong.
So that would be August through to
beginning of September. Yeah, towards the middle of September.
Did you get ashore or stop anywhere?
Yep, we got ashore I actually got ashore at, well, first place, we couldn't go ashore at Port Said because problems had started in the canal. We went through the canal in the Red Sea, and I mean, it was a terrific trip, really, because I was very interested, you know. And, oh, damn, I'd never been abroad before. I'd been to London, never mind about going, you know, all these weird and wonderful places. And we found it ever so interesting. That was my big thing about it. And we got ashore at Colombo, which is now called, what is it called? Called
Sri Lanka.
Sri Lanka now, yeah. Got ashore at Colombo. And ashore at Singapore. There are two places, only two places that we got ashore.
But what did you think of them?
Well, I was very interested, you know, I was very interested indeed. I mean, it opened me eyes. I mean, that was a world I never dreamed about, you know, all these people and all these beggars and all that sort of stuff, you know, and because you'd read about them and seen about this sort of thing, but now to experience it and see it all was fantastic. And, yeah, I enjoyed all of that. That was great. It was really exciting, you know, wonderful. And I enjoyed it all. So
we pulled in the first week of September.
Pardon?
You pulled into Hong Kong
first. Yeah. Yeah, pulled it in Hong Kong first week in September, and we had we then went, put us on a train, I think, or trucks, I can't remember. We went to Sam Hoy Camp out at Fan Ling, which is about 30 miles in the New Territories.
And what was your reception when you got to Sam Hoy Camp? You know, how did it?
Well, nothing very special, really. We just arrived, and they put us in this Nissen hut. Told us we were being attached to them, the Middlesex Regiment, for training, further training before going on to Korea. Which we did quite a lot of.
What were what sort of accommodation did they have at Sam Hoy Camp? Was it different from sort of European?
Yeah, no, we were in Nissen huts. We were in Nissen huts at Sam Hoy. That was a Nissen hut camp.
So no different from it?
No, we just had a fan in the middle of the room, a couple of fans in the Nissen hut, you know, to try and move the air about. It's very, very hot and sticky, and we used to go training there.
Now, what sort of training were you doing?
Well, we were doing mainly, used to do a bit of hill training, up and down the hills, and marching, and rifle training, and all that sort of stuff, physical training, and we did that, and then they asked for volunteers to go on courses. And I volunteered to go on the Salt Pioneer course. So I managed to get away on the course, on the Salt Pioneer course.
Yeah, where was that held at?
That was held in the Caroan Peninsula. That was about a month's course.
Where they quite interested in this old pioneers.
Yeah.
Take me through what you learned with them.
Well, what we learned with them was basically what a sapper learned in the Royal Engineers. We learned about explosives.
Tell us about that first. What was it to learn about explosives?
Well, they was to learn what the force of the explosive was, and learn about cordite and all that sort of stuff, how to lay out, how to blow out lumps of rock, or blow up pillar boxes, or everything, really. And, I had notebooks what I made, and how much explosive you'd need to break up a certain amount of concrete, or steel, and all that sort of thing. And all the different types of explosives, or plastic explosives. And all that type of thing. Also, we learned to how to lay minefields.
Tell me about that. How would you lay a minefield? What was the principle?
Well, you sort of laid them in squares, really. You had a fence and you put a marker on it to tell everybody I was there. And then you laid them in a patterns, in certain patterns, different patterns.
Who would decide which pattern where?
Well, the officer would say which pattern, and then that was up to you to go out and lay it, to that pattern.
And would it be very accurate?
Quite accurate. Quite accurate.
What sort of patterns were they?
You're sort of getting diagonals about, I can't remember now, it's 50 years ago you're talking about. It's saying, saying a diagonal pattern, sort of four to form a diagonal, four minds to form a diagonal, about 10 feet apart or something like that, 9 feet apart. And then, of course, there was the anti-personnel ones, so it was tripwires. We learned all about the tripwire ones, the anti-personnel ones and all that sort of thing. And also how to lift them.
How would you lift them?
Well, I mean, the thing was, really, I mean, you had to find them. I mean, the anti-tank ones are okay because you wouldn't set them off, not by standing on them. But the, they weren't bad, but I mean, the anti-personnel ones were mainly worked off trip-wise. The thing was to find the trip-wise, follow the trip-wire along, and then disarm the explosive, which you had to do. Because these older way of disarming these things, and they put a pin in or do something or the other, or blow it up or whatever you've got to do. And so we learned all about explosives and minefields, learned about water supplies. Well, that was just about tanks, different types of tanks, where you get drinking water tanks, where Copac linings and things which floated up, and also we learned about road building, little bits of road building, which all came in later in Korea.
How would you relay a road, you know?
Well, I mean, the thing was to put the gravel down. Put a gravel down, put a berm stone in, which contained the gravel, and laying different grades of gravel, thick one at the bottom, bringing it up to finer ones at the top, and sort of make a smoother finish. And we did quite a lot of that in Korea, where we had pulled roads because there's nothing there. And I enjoyed that. I enjoyed being with the assault pioneer, so why not?
Anything else you learned with them?
So,
what about laying out barbed wire?
Well, you did that anyway in the infantry, didn't you? Barbed wire and that sort of thing. We did do that, but I mean, we were doing the more, spent on the course, we spent more time down the minefields and the explosives and that sort of stuff. We did some practical stuff as well.
What kind of thing?
Well, I remember one thing we did there. There was a sort of, they'd cut a road into this camp, and there was some big old rock sticking out on it. We blew that off, and the officer said we had to work out how much, what explosive to use, and where to put it, and how much, and try it. And we tried it, and they'd done it. Blew it off, clean as a whistle. So rock sticking out the side of the cutting. Things like that, and we used to lay out ammunition and explosives into the field, and wire them up and all that sort of thing, and then set them off and make them plenty of bangs and things like that, noise. But so we did some stuff there.
And you enjoyed this stuff?
I enjoyed it because the discipline was less. I was then beginning to think for myself again and do things, and I was enjoying more that, doing that sort of thing.
So this gave you you were sort of returning to your tradesman sort of
thing. That's right, that type of thing.
Now, I just want to ask, because Bob, someone we've interviewed called Bob Guess, who I think you know, but he wasn't on this, from listening to the tapes, it would sound as if he was on the same course, but he wasn't, was he?
No.
He was on later.
A later course than me. Yeah. Obviously, he's Lance Corporal when he joined us.
So this pioneer course took about.
I think that was about a month's course, so 3 or 4 weeks. So.
What happened when you went back to the 1st Battalion at Sangui?
Well, then I was then went back to the Assault Pioneer Battalion with the Middlesex. With the Middlesex Regiment. I never went back with... we first went there was with C Company, and when I went back, I went with the Assault Pioneer Battalion.
And that was therefore headquarter company?
Support company.
Support, sorry, they changed their name, yeah.
Yeah, but not, yeah, we had a headquarter company and a support company, but we were support. It was like the Salt Pioneers, the 3-inch mortars, and the Vickers machine gun things, they were formed support company.
And what sort of thing were you doing with them?
Well, that was then on the practical side. We used to do little jobs on the camp, anything, bit of bricklaying or whatever would came up. And but we also, what we did do is we then went up under because you got to remember that was the time of the early days of communism in China, and nobody knew for sure whether we were going to stay there or we were going to get pushed out by the communists. And so we went up, we had to go up into the hills, up into a hill called Birdley Hill. It was quite a high one. Birdley Hill. And we had to go up there, and we were building some permanent lookouts to look over the border of the new territories into communist China.
How would you go about building an observation post?
Well, we were working up there with a proper concrete one. They were dug out and we concreted the sides and the tops with a little slit window looking out towards the front. All was shuttered concrete, reinforced shuttered concrete. We had Chinese labour. There was about 12 of us. We had some tents up there and lived up there, and I had a couple of sessions up there, and I think that was when we went back, when Bob Gash probably joined us. I can't remember.
Were you still a private? Or
no, been? I'd been made up to Lance Corporal. Before we went up there, the officer said, well, somebody made me up to Lance Corporal. Or you might have done it up there when we were working.
But
probably.
Why were you picked for that? I mean, I know people think it's not much of a promotion, but it is quite a promotion to Lance Corporal,
yeah. I don't know, probably because I could work and they had a good idea what was going on constructionally. You know, with the construction being, because I mean, when I went to night school, and we were taught construction engineering and that sort of, we touched on everything really, besides just plumbing and that sort of thing. And also working in the construction industry, you get to know, don't you? And, I think that was probably because of that. No. Not because of my drill things or anything, because I wasn't a drill soldier.
What about, you'd have some of the proper Middlesex men, would they object to you being put in, you know, charge?
No, they didn't. I did have some Middlesex. Obviously, we were just all mixed together, and we didn't have a problem at all.
And what did you think of Bob Guest, Private Guest, when he arrived? I mean, just to give us an idea, because we know...
He was all right, Bob. He arrived with another guy. I forget his other name. Couple of them arrived, they'd been on this course and they arrived with us. And, we'd been there a while then, you know.
Was he a decent soldier?
Yeah, he was okay. He was quite keen, really, Bob. I mean, because he wanted to. He was okay. They made him up to Lance Corporal, the same officer did. On an acting basis, but he was a permanent one. But when we left Hong Kong, I sort of forgot about it. My stripe